Section 3, Georgia from Trustee to Royal Colony. Throughout the trustee period, Georgians spent most of their time working to meet their basic needs. Their focus was to survive each day by building homes, clearing land, planting and tending their crops, and providing food and clothing for themselves. The trustees continued to try to govern the colony from Great Britain. Although they did not understand what living in the colony was like, they appointed men in Georgia to report to them and carry out their instructions, but they never allowed much government representation for their colonists. Despite the trustees' plans, rules, and dreams, the economy did not develop as they had hoped. Although some areas did experience economic growth, most colonists' focus was on meeting their basic needs. There was little time to plan for economic expansion, education, or religion. The end of the trustee period. By the late 1740s, many of the trustees were disillusioned. Their early vision of the colony had failed. The cultivation of olives and grapes had not been successful. Production of silk was a disappointment. The trustees had given in to demand for changes in the land policies, on the sale and use of rum, and on slavery. Maintaining enthusiasm on the trustee board became increasingly difficult. Sometimes they did not even have enough people at their meetings to conduct business. When Parliament failed to provide additional funds for Georgia in 1751, the trustees voted to turn the colony over to the British government. Georgia became a royal colony under the control of the king. Under the trustees, rum and other hard liquors were banned. This ban was officially lifted when Georgia became a royal colony. Even though Georgia did not become the colony the trustees had envisioned, it did have accomplishments. Georgia had successfully defended itself and South Carolina from Spain. Augusta had become an important trade center with the American Indians, a business that would continue to prosper until the American Revolution. The colonists had cleared fields for planting and built homes and public buildings, although most were very basic. They had learned to survive in this new environment. The king appointed a royal governor to represent the crown in Georgia. By the time he arrived, Georgia had started on the path to growth and prosperity, becoming a royal colony. In the years the king and his governors ruled Georgia, the colony also had its first representative assemblies or legislatures. The colony's population grew and its economy prospered. The land available for settlement expanded as the royal governor made two important treaties with the American Indians. It was also a period of cultural growth as educational institutions, religion, and social life were established, although on a limited scale. However, this was also the time that saw the first slave laws and the beginning of the plantation system that would have a devastating effect on men and women of African heritage. Government. The government in Georgia was quite different after the trustee period ended. The executive of the colony was a royal governor appointed by the king. He was the king's representative to the colony and the colony's representative to the king. When the trustees gave up their charter to the king, Georgia no longer had that document to serve as a framework for government. Instead, each royal governor arrived with instructions from the king, who set the rules under which he would govern Georgia. The royal governor had many powers, including the right to call the legislature into session or dismiss it, grant land, commission ships, pardon those convicted of crimes, spend funds, and serve as commander-in-chief of the colony. The royal government also included a 12-member council that was officially appointed by the king. The men chosen were prominent local leaders. This governor's council, in addition to advising the governor, served as the upper house of the bicameral, two-house legislature. As such, it could propose and vote on laws. The council, along with the governor, was the colony's supreme court. For the first time, the colony was to have an elected assembly called the Commons House of Assembly. This would be the legislature's lower house, similar to today's House of Representatives. This body could also propose and vote on laws. Only the lower house could introduce bills about money. Land ownership. The key to financial success in Georgia was acquiring land. The restrictions of the trustee period were gone. In the royal period, settlers could procure land in three ways. 1. They could buy it. 2. They could receive it as a gift or an inheritance. Or 3. They could receive it as a grant, gift, from the colonial government. Every Tuesday, the governor and his council met and made land grants. The size of a grant was based on the size of the applicant's household, which included not only family members, but also indentured servants and enslaved people. An indentured servant was a person who sold his or her labor for a period of years in return for passage to the New World and support during the period of servitude. The head of a household could ask for 100 acres for himself or herself and 50 additional acres for each member of the household. This method of granting land was called the headright system. In the early years of the royal period, most settlers were attracted to the low-lying lands between the Savannah and Altamaha rivers. By 1763, the British government extended Georgia's territory to include the land between the Altamaha and St. Mary's rivers. By this time, land in South Carolina was increasingly expensive. Many Carolinians came to Georgia, bringing enslaved persons with them, along with knowledge of rice and indigo production. Enslaved people in Georgia. Both rice and indigo were cash crops that required much labor. Cash crops are crops that are grown to be sold for income. Indentured servants from Europe had been part of trustee Georgia, but they became less desirable in the royal period. The indentured servants were free when they completed their term, and the planters had to find new workers. Planters who grew rice and indigo relied increasingly on the labor of enslaved people, who remained a permanent workforce. Slavery was allowed in Georgia near the end of the trustee period and increased during the royal period. Although some people in other colonies had tried to enslave American Indians as labor, enslaved people in royal Georgia were of African heritage. In the 1750s, most were brought to Georgia from other colonies or from the Caribbean islands. Georgians also went to South Carolina to purchase enslaved people. By the mid-1760s, enslaved people came directly to the port of Savannah, mainly from areas in West Africa. More of the enslaved people were men than women because men were needed for the physical work of clearing fields on new plantations. The larger the plantation, the higher the percentage of enslaved males. Until the 1770s, most of Georgia's enslaved people lived in the coastal areas, and most were on plantations rather than on smaller farms.